This is my first video to Perimeter, but and I just left yesterday, but I'm kind of already impressed by the atmosphere of the institute and the wonderful buildings and the well-organized visitor conference and so on. And I started to stay here throughout the city, so I hope we have more opportunities to talk with you. And well, today I'm going to talk about my recent work about crystal meltings and polarized manifolds. And this work is in collaboration with Hiroshi Okuri, which we put on the Earth last November. So, let me try to begin by describing the problem. So, the problem is to count the number of degeneracies of EPS states. So, the setting is general. So, I'm going to consider some string theory for fact five on some parallel manifold. And then, I'm going to consider various defects that are not in various cycles of the parallel manifold. And then, so I'm going to count the number of EPS states of such a setting. And this problem has an interesting connection with various topics, and most notably, the connection with the counting problem of radical microstates. And also, from game theory viewpoint, it's related to bigger game theories, and also, for example, the counting problem of instantons. And it has, since we are counting EPS states, it has an interesting application to ADS-CT. And recently, there is an interesting discussion about whole-person phenomenon, and so on. And today, I'm going to talk a bit about the connection with black holes. And I'm going to use the technical papers, and if I have time, I'm going to talk about low processing and so on. But let me try to begin by describing the collection of this concrete problem is the harmonic string theory. And as far as I know, there are two different connections between this topological string theory and the concrete problem. The first problem, the first connection is provided by the celebrated OSP conjecture, which states that when the D-brain charges are chosen, such that we have a large black hole, and supergravity approximation varies, and then we have the relation like a Z black hole. So this is a position function counting the black hole, counting the degeneracy of the BPS states. And this is equivalent to an absolute value steward of the topological string position function. So this is the one relation, which is called the OSP conjecture. And another connection between this counting problem and topological string theory is provided by the so-called crystal meltings, as proposed by a clinical proceeding in Baffert and also by Lipov in 2003. So what we propose is schematic representing is a relation like this. So Z black hole is equivalent to Z topological. So what we consider is the case of a single D6 brain with various D0 and D2 brains. And then they computed the degeneracies of EPS states. And this is equivalent to the topological string partition function, which in turn, in the case of C3, is related to the statistical mechanical model crystal meltings. Which is shown here. And this was made possible by using the techniques of Donaldson Thomas theory, which is a kind of mathematical theory. So well, I'd like to point out that these two relations in general hold in different regions of validities. So even if you have a relation, this relation might not hold, and even if you have this relation might not hold, and so on. And so I'm going to talk about the relation between these things in the discussion. But today, I want to concentrate on this case, namely about the crystal meltings case. So, what's new in crystal melting? Well, originally, the crystal melting was proposed for the case of C3, just from C3. And of course, it's a totally private Carrier manifold. And so, this kind of crystal melting picture is just for C3. But it was subsequently generalized by using the topological vertex formulation as proposed by Abadie Krem-Malina and Buffer and so on. And the basic idea is to cut the toric diagram into various pieces. And then we have a triagonal vertex which totally looks like a C3. So by using this kind of crystallized picture as a basic building block, I can compute the topological string partition function for arbitrary toric diagram manifold. So this is the general idea. But that's a beautiful development, but at the same time, the crystal meltings picture itself is proposed only for basic
crystal. Can I ask a nice question? Why is it called crystal meltings?
Sorry?
Why is it called
I see. So I should probably explain. So I think so first of all, it's a kind of melting cone of the crystal. So there are various boxes shown here, and each of box are meant to be represented by a kind of atom in the crystal. And then I'm going to remove each atom from the corner of the crystal. So in this case, there are a bunch of, say, order of 10 of atoms are removed from the crystal. And then I'm going to remove more and more if I go to the thermodynamic limit and so on.
And actually, this kind of crystal melting can be seen in a certain setting in experiment, actually. Well, I'm not sure, I mean, this partition function is actually relevant to the physics experiment, but so. So it, that corresponds to including various numbers of d-brains. That's actually what I'm going to explain. So there, the ground state is just a corner of the crystal. And then I'm going to remove atoms. And that corresponds to including more and more d-brains. So that's what they propose. So I was saying that I'm considering single D6 brain with various D0 and D2 brains. So by the, well, in the case of CCD, we have only D0 actually. But and then if I add D0, various D0 brains, I'm going to remove various atoms. And the number of D0 brains corresponds to the number of boxes removed from the crystal.
Large black hole as well when you have D0.
Well, in this case, actually, for the case of D0 and D6, I don't think we have a large black hole. But actually, that's a kind of subtle issue. And well, so, well, naively speaking, D0 and D6 doesn't admit VPF states. But in this case setting, actually, we are including the VPF. And there is actually an old paper by Edward Mitnick which say that VPF bound state of D0 and D6 can exist if we include VPF. So when we are talking about Wolinsky conjecture, we are talking about black holes. So we are not including VPF. So naively speaking, yeah, in that case, since D0 and D6 bound state does not exist. But in this case, we are including VPF, so D6, D0 bound state exists. So that kind of bound state I found here. So, and of course, this is just not just a story. For example, there is a beautiful story by Takuya, which proposed to generalize this picture to the case of conical. But at present, no, there is no general crystal melting picture for the arbitrary case of toric harmonic. So, and Auerbach has succeeded in generalizing this crystal melting picture to the case of completely arbitrary toric harmonic. And this was made possible by the recent development in non-commutative non-automous theory, which began in the work by Stanford in 2007, and also by multiple points in Nikkei. So these people are mathematicians, and this paper is actually quite kind of new, which appeared just last September last year. And well, these are kind of mathematical theories, but if you look at their papers and try to understand what they are saying, this problem is actually almost equivalent to the counting problem bound to the d-brains, which I was talking about in the previous slide. So by using this newly developed theory, we have succeeded in proposing a new statistical mechanical model of crystal for the case of arbitrary toric harmonic. So that's what I'm going to explain. So I'm almost finishing the introduction, but is there any questions so far? Okay, if there is none, I'm going to talk about my friend. And well, this friend looks very complicated, but basically I have already finished the introduction, and also I'm going to talk about supersymmetric quantum mechanics, but this is the kind of preparation for the story about our new crystal melting model. So this is the most important part which I like to spend most of the time. And if I still have time, I can talk about the relation between how we came to the result using this mathematical theory. And also, I'd like to discuss the connection with wall crossings, which is a kind of hot topic these days. So let me begin by describing the supersymmetric Weber quantum mechanics. So why do we have to consider supersymmetric quantum mechanics? So before explaining that, let me try to be a bit more specific about what kind of configurations I'm considering. So I'm going to consider type 2A string theory compactified on toric Caribbean threefold. And so this is a non-compact Caribbean manifold. And then I'm going to consider a single D6 brain filling the entire Caribbean manifold. So recall that D6 brain has word volume 6 plus 1. And this D6 brain filling the entire Caribbean manifold looks like just like a particle from four dimensional viewpoint. And also, I'm going to consider various numbers of D0 brains and D2 brains. So these D0 brains looks like a point, and these D2 brains have two cycles of the Caribbean manifold. So again, these also look like particles from four dimensional viewpoint. So the word volume theory of these brains from four dimensional viewpoint looks like a quantum mechanics. And actually, it's a Weber quantum mechanics. And so the question is, what kind of Weber quantum mechanics we have? And this has a quite a long history, dating back first to the work by Douglas Moore in the case of orbifold. And it was subsequently generalized to a more complicated toric Caribbean manifolds. And there are various techniques to do this by using, for example, exceptional fractions, derived categories, and so on. But But the technique I'm going to use today is the so-called brain tunneling techniques, as proposed by Hanani and collaborators since 2005. Well, I have written a kind of extensive review about this topic, so if you are interested, you can have a look at it. But let me try to give a kind of overall view summary of what these kind of techniques has to say. So the important point is that brain tunneling techniques give first a Kuiper diagram and a sweep potential starting from arbitrary toric-Kuiper manifold. So toric-Kuiper manifolds are just special class of manifolds in which basically everything is encoded in a complex foretor, which is called the toric diagram. So this is an example of the toric diagram. And then starting from this toric diagram, I can write down by using complicated techniques the Kuiper diagrams on two-dimensional torus. And well, these are not just a kind of mnemonics, but they have physical meaning, as clarified in a paper by Krumer and collaborators. And also, I have also done some work about this. But the important, so these figures might look complicated, but don't be discouraged right now, because these are not really needed. So the important thing, most important thing I should say, is that Kuiper diagram is leading on the two-dimensional torus. So this is the Kuiper diagram where we have gauge groups UN here, UN, UM here, UN, and K here, and so on. And then these arrows correspond to bifundamentals. And so these Kuiper diagrams specify the matter content of the gauge theory. And then this Kuiper diagram is drawn on a two-dimensional torus. So, well, I forgot to say that this green square is meant to be the fundamental region of the torus. So we have an edge here on the right and the edge on the left. So, and these edges are identified, for example. And of course, the edge on the top and the edge on the bottom are identified and so on. And if you look at this figure, there are seemingly four different vertices. But since this is the torus, this vertex and this vertex are identified. So we only have three vertices. And if you count carefully, there are seven number of arrows. So this is, if you forget the fact that this diagram is leading on the torus, it's just a Kuiper diagram shown like here. So what's the merit of writing the Kuiper diagram two-dimensional torus? Well, the merit is that it encodes simultaneously the information of the Kuiper diagram and the superpotential. So let me try to explain in this example. So this is an example. So this is actually the same example, completely the same example as this one, although it looks slightly different. And I have numbered the arrows. Like, for example, there is an arrow going from vertex 3 to vertex 1, which I have numbered as x3, 1, and so on. And then each of the arrow is represented as xij. And then, for example, there is a triangle here. And if you go along the orientation of arrows, you have a product like x3, 1, x1, 3, x3, 3. And this corresponds to a certain term. So this time, x3, 3, x3, 1, x1, 3 in the superpotential. And so on. And if you look carefully, there are actually four different faces. And each of the faces contributes to a certain term in the superpotential. So this is the general rule. But as I emphasized, the important thing is that in this kind of brain tunneling techniques, the Kuiper diagram, which specifies the matter content, is leading on the two-dimensional torus. And from which information, we can lead off the Kuiper and the superpotential. So recall that I'm considering supersymmetric quantum mechanics, which is a dimensional reduction of four-dimensional n equal one supersymmetric gauge theory. And in order to specify n equal one supersymmetric gauge theory, we have to specify first the matter content, what kind of gauge groups we have, what kind of matter fields we have. And also, I have to specify the superpotential. And all these information are encoded in the Kuiper diagram leading on the torus. So this is a kind of classical summary of what brain tunneling techniques tells us. And based on these techniques, I'm going to describe the new crystal mating model. And the important point is that BPS state, which we want to count, is in one-to-one correspondence with a configuration of a molten crystal. So I'd like to show you an example of crystal, which looks very complicated, but don't be afraid, because I'm going to take time to explain. So there are two figures, and the figure on the left is a Kuiper diagram leading on two-dimensional torus. And I have lifted the diagram to its universal cover. So, well, previously, there was a figure like this. So this is a Kuiper diagram on the torus. So each of these squares is a fundamental region of the torus, and so on. But I have lifted this graph to a universal cover. So it's a kind of periodic graph leading on the three-dimensional frame. So we have various vertices and various arrows and so on. And I have previously explained that we can obtain this graph starting from the toric diagram, namely from the geometry. And then what we do is to write a configuration of the atoms like this. So this corresponds to the kind of ground state. And so because of that, I said I'm going to consider a single D6 brain with various numbers of D0 and D2 brains. So as a very special case, I can consider the situation where we include only a single D6 brain without any D0 and D2 brains. And that kind of VPS state corresponds to this unmolten crystal. And so let me take some time to explain how I drew. So I came to this result. So first of all, there are various vertices on the figure on the left. And each of the atom here, on the figure on the right, corresponds to a vertex on the left. So for example, there is a blue vertex here, and there is a corresponding blue vertex here, and you have correspondingly a white atom here. And also say there is a left atom here, a left vertex here, and correspondingly there is some atom here, and so on. And the important point here is that atom has different colors. So I fear that some people sitting behind might not be able to see well. So I have magnified this figure around this blue point. So the figure looks like this. And well, recall that this each of the vertex here is originally one of the vertices of a Kreber diagram. So originally I have a Kreber diagram like this one, and in this case we have three vertices. So each of the vertex has either number 1, 2, or 3. So correspondingly, each of the vertex here has also numbers. And according to that number, I'm going to color the atoms in this case like black, gray, and white. But the color, there is no definite meaning to the color. So if you like, you can color by green, yellow, red, or something. But in this case, I have used this color. And so if I repeat, I'm tracing the atom for each vertex of the crystal, and I'm going to color the atom according to the position of the vertex in the original Kreber diagram. Well, so this looks complicated, but there exists a kind of another way to say what this crystal is meant to represent. And another way of saying that is that each atom in the crystal corresponds to an equivalence class of paths starting at the reference point. So I have chosen a certain point, which I call the reference point. This is the blue point here. And then I have specified the reference point, and then I'm going to consider the set of all possible paths starting from this vertex. So they are obviously very fast. Like, for example, you can go here. Also, you can go here, 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 and go back, and so on. So they are various paths. And recall that each arrow corresponds to a bifundamental field. So a field in the gauge theory. And I have computed the superpotential using brain tidying techniques. So if you differentiate that with respect to a certain field, we have the Efton constraints, which means that certain paths should be equivalent to another path, and so on. And I'm going to identify all the paths which are equivalent under F-term constraints. So let me try to give you an example. So for example, there I have drawn a path here, like shown here. And then this is identified with the set of paths shown on the right. Well, this is because you have a term in the superpotential corresponding to this space, and also another term in the superpotential corresponds to this. And if you differentiate it, the superpotential with respect to this bifundamental field, you have a relation like that this path is equivalent to this path, and so on. Well, but the important point is just I'm going to consider the set of all possible paths starting from particular vertex on the Kreber diagram leading on the two-dimensional torus. And then there exists a kind of theorem which says that each set of paths, well, I should write, not, instead of arrow, I should call it the path. Each path starting from this I0, this difference path, from any other point I is equivalent under F-term constraints to Vi times omega j, where Vi is the shortest path starting from this vertex to the I destination, and omega is the set of paths. It's just a path circling around the face. So let me try to give you an example. So this is the reference point, and I have chosen another point I. And this green arrow is just an example of a path starting from I0 and ending at I. And in this example, it's almost obvious that the shortest path starting from this to I, I0 to I, is this represented by this green arrow. So according to the theorem, we should be able to represent this green path as a form like this. And you can actually do this because, as I have explained, this operator, the operator corresponding to this set of paths is equivalent to the set of paths shown here. And this just corresponds to the first going along this bi, the shortest path, times going along the circle and so on. So each of the paths can be written as the bi times omega j, which means that every path or every atom is specified by two numbers, two data. First, the position of the atom, position of the endpoint, and also this number j. So corresponding to that, I'm going to place the atom here. So I said previously that all of the paths, suppose that I have a path starting from I0 and going in a very, very complicated way, and suppose that it ends at a certain point. Let me call it I. And then from the previous theorem, we learned that it should be equivalent to this bi times omega j. And I'm going to represent this path as an atom in the position I with the depth j. So probably I forgot to say that this is meant to be a semi-infinite configuration of crystal. So for example, I have here an atom, and I have another atom below it, another atom further below it, and so on. And we have so infinite number of atoms below it. And also this kind of corresponds to a kind of leech of the crystal. So it's like a pyramid, almost like a pyramid. So we have this is the top of the pyramid, and this is the reach of the pyramid, and we have infinite number of atoms below all these things. So well, probably I have explained a bit too detail, but the important point is that given a toric diagram, namely the geometry, I can exists a systematic method to construct the crystal model like this. And I said that this corresponds to a single D6 brain without any D0 and D2 brains. So the natural question is, what happens if I'm going to include D0 and D2 brains? And well, that corresponds to a configuration of a morphism crystal. So this, again, still looks complicated, but the important point is that I have removed all these atoms, say 10 or maybe 12 or something, of atoms from the original unmolten crystal. And this, each of the atoms, whether either colored white, gray, or black, carries certain combination of D0 and D2 brain charges. So I think this is a generalization of what Kumaran did in the case of C3. So there was already a question about that. So in the case of C3, we are considering just D6 brain and various D0 brains. And then including various D0 brains correspond to removing various atoms from the crystal. And it's almost similar to the case here. So I'm going to consider various D0, this single D6 brain with various D0 and D2 brains. And well, in this case, I can include D2 brain as well. So we have various possible charges of D brains. And then, if I want to consider a bound state with various charges, that corresponds to removing the atoms. But the difference for the case of C3 is that we are considering a situation where each of the atoms has colors. And that corresponds to the fact that we can consider various D0 and D2 brain charges in the corresponding toric hybrid manifold. So any questions so far? Okay, so this is a kind of statistical mechanical model. And I'm going to, and the important point here is that every BPS state contributes into the index, actually. So actually I'm considering with the index of the supersymmetric Weber quantum mechanics. So BPS states are constructed out of atoms shown here. So there, in this case, there are three atoms, three corresponding to the number of vertices of the Weber diagram. And each of the D brains carry a linear combination of D brain charges. And well, this is a kind of, the important point is that each of the atoms carries linear combination of D brain charges, not the D brain charges themselves. And this is a kind of reminiscent of the Crook models as opposed to the Sakata models. So in the old days of elementary particle physics, Sakata proposed that, for example, neutrons and protons and lambda particles, there should be the basic fundamental constituent of nature. So that's what he proposed. But actually, that's not the case. And it turns out that their linear combinations, like quarks, are really the fundamental constituents of nature. And this is, in a sense, similar, in the sense that so we are considering the D6 ring with various D0 and D2 brains. So naively speaking, you might guess that D0 brains and D2 brains themselves might be the basic constituents of BPS states. But that's not the case in this, actually. And what we found is that their linear combinations, the atoms shown here, are the basic constituents. And this is a kind of reminiscent, although slightly different, but kind of reminiscent of the, for example, bubbling ABS geometry as proposed by LLM and also by fast flow conjecture and so on. And so, well, this might have some interesting applications, although we are not currently sure. And, well, I was telling you that I'm going to remove atoms from the crystal. But, of course, PQY brain there. So that depends on what you mean by in the context. But for example, there exists a relation between this crystal model and the PQY brain there, for example. So I was saying that this is like a pyramid with the ridges spreading in these directions. But actually, there is a kind of correspondence between the direction of these lines, the ridges of the crystal, and the PQF. That's kind of actually what we conjectured in our paper. So there exists a systematic method to write the figure like this. And we conjectured that the shape of the ridges should coincide with that of the PQF. But
respond to the PQ5 brain, right? So what's the BPS state that responds to the PQ5 in the context of PQ5 brain?
Is
it possible to find, for example, connecting some kind of piece of the PQ5 brain web to the diagram?
So well, I see. Actually, I think that one of the answers is that if you take the sum dynamic unit, you're going to reproduce the PQ5. Okay, I was trying to talk about it in the discussions, but let me try to take some time to explain that, since there was a question. So that, I think that corresponds to some of the sound dynamic limit of the system. So probably, I hope that this might answer some of your questions. So in the case of C3, the PQ may be something like a trigonal complex. And in that case, we have a melting point on the crystal, and I'm going to remove various number of atoms. And then if I go to take some dynamic limit, maybe if I want to remove various infinite number of atoms, and then we have a shape like this, and then this shape is called kind of called the limit shape, and if we take the limit where the thickness of this figure shrinks to zero, and then you are going to reproduce the PQ5 wave shown here. So actually, completely similar story goes for the case of arbitrary microphone. So in this case, well, actually, probably.
I should probably go this way, back to the original slide. So let me see. So this is the original slide.
And so that's the same thing happens in this case as well. So this is just the infinite configuration of crystals, and I want to remove various numbers of atoms. And then if you take the limit, some dynamic limit, the figure like that. So original configuration looks like almost like a pyramid. So we have a face here, another face here, another face here, another face here. And I'm going to remove various atoms from here, and so on. And if I'm going to remove infinite number of atoms, and then we have a figure like this one. So atoms are removed here, and the corner has melted away. And in each of these regions, the atoms are not removed at all. But in these regions, atoms are removed. And then if you take a limit, we have a kind of figure there, shown here. Actually, we are kind of like a paper about this some dynamic limits, which will appear quite soon, I think. And so probably, I think that answers some of your questions. So let me see what I'm talking. Any other question? Okay, so let me see. I have 30 minutes or so, but let me see. So let me try to explain a bit more about this. So I said that I'm going to remove atoms from the crystal melting configuration, but there exists a certain condition So in the case of CC, we have a melting point of the crystal and a bunch of even atoms, for example, from here. This is here, and if you involve the even one more, it looks like this, and so on. So I'm going to include various atoms from the crystal, but you cannot suddenly take, for example, an atom from here. This kind of thing is forbidden. So I have to impose certain conditions for how to remove the atoms. And that kind of rule is deformated as a melting rule, shown here. So I have the set of arrows. And then suppose that I'm going to write the atom in the complement of the this omega. Well, I should say. So this is omega c. So I'm going to denote the set of atoms removed from the crystal as omega c, and the set of atoms unremoved from the atom as omega. And then I'm going to impose the condition that if this A alpha, so there is an atom here, and there is an atom here, and let us write the atom at the endpoint of the arrow as A alpha, for example. And then I'm going to impose the condition that if this A alpha is included in this omega C, I mean, the set of atoms from removed from the crystal, then the alpha should also be included in omega C. So let me try to see in this example. So in this example, for example, there is an alpha here, and there is an arrow A here, and then the atom at the endpoint is meeting A alpha. And this condition says that if this A alpha is included in omega C, and then alpha should also be included in omega C, and so on. So this is the kind of rule for how to remove the crystal. And one last thing I'd like to say is that this, I was talking using the language of crystals, but this is equivalently deformated as a diamond model. So instead of using this, we have a configuration of the so-called perfect one. So let me try to explain. So in this case, the vertices, there is a graph with the graph and five vertices. And this kind of graph is a very special graph for the bipartite graph, because each of the vertices is tied either graph or five, and graph vertices connected only to five vertices, and five vertices connected only to five vertices, graph vertices, so on. And then a perfect matching corresponds to a subset of edges such that each vertex is chosen exactly once. So it's like a coupling problem of men and women. So we have the set of graph vertices and one set of white vertices, and I like to make a pair by choosing each one from the set of graph vertices and one from the set of five vertices, and so on. And so each of these configurations can be identified with the configuration of a perfect matching in the diamond. So some people might like to use this, or some people might like to use this. And well, so that depends on your preference and your taste. So probably I was going a bit too technical, but the basic point is that starting from the toric diamond, I can write down the crystal, and then each BPS state, every BPS state contributing to the index, can be written down by just removing atoms from this melting crystal configuration.
You're going to prove this statement.
Yeah, actually. But I'm not going to go into the too much detail, but I'm going to prove this statement. That's what I'm going to do in this section. So I'm going to kind of prove, well, I'm not going into the too much detail, but kind of give you a basic outline of how we came to the result using mathematical theory called non-commutative Jones-Thomas theory. And so mathematically, so I was talking originally about the counting problem in the states of various events that can form of cycles, and this is deformulated as a non-commutative Jones-Thomas theory. And if you look at the literature of non-commutative Jones-Thomas theory, there is like a past algebra, its module, and compactation of modular space, state stability, and so on. So there seems to be many unfamiliar terminologies, but if you look carefully, the thing is not so complicated, so let me try to explain. By first introducing a new notion for the past algebra. So I'm going to consider a ring of all possible paths operators, namely operators modeled out by external constraints. So you call that each of the paths corresponds to the bifundamental fields. Each is an operator in the gauge field. So I'm going to consider the set of all possible products. So for example, this is an example of the field corresponding to the polynomial, and in this example we have A's and B's. So the possible operator corresponds in this case
Okay, for example, ABABDABA, and so on. Well, it's going to be one or two, either one or two. So there are various possibilities. And they are not necessarily gauge invariant. So of course, most of them are gauge variable. And I'm going to consider as a set of all such operators plotted out by F-time relations. And this is kind of non-commutative algebra. So let me try to explain why this is non-commutative. So I have an arrow here, for example, and I have another arrow here. And then, so I said that this is a ring, so I have to define a multiplication. And I want to define the multiplication by just compounding these three parts. So this is n to the k times v. But of course, this is not always possible. Suppose that the endpoint of this, for example, arrow A, does not coincide with the starting point of another arrow B. And in this case, there is no way to define a concatenation. So in this case, A times B is non-zero, but in this case, I define the concatenation as zero. So in this case, for example, B times A is zero because the endpoint of this B is different from the start point of this arrow A. So this is actually kind of non-commutative algebra, which is the origin of the name non-commutative Johnson-Thomas theory. Well, this looks like a terrible formalism, but what the mathematics literature says is that computation of Witten index of the supersymmetric quantum mechanics is equivalent to the counting of theta stable A modules fixed by two-dimensional torus. Well, so let me try to explain step by step. So first, recall that this A is a set of all possible paths on the Kuiper algebra modeled out by F-time relation. So it's some algebra. And then I'm going to consider its module. And modules are basically a representation. So this is just a kind of very formal thing with various, I'm just considering various arrows and the concatenation and so on. They're very formal. But in physics situation, we have to consider its representation theory. So that corresponds to considering what is called A modules in the mathematics literature. And I'm going to compute a Witten index and count the BPS space. Thus, I'm interested in the moduli space of the supersymmetric Kuiper quantum mechanics. And the moduli space is specified by two data, the first by the F-term constraints and the D-term constraints, of course, and then have to divide by the gauge group. That's the way to compute the moduli space. And I want to compute the Euler character of that moduli space. So we have to take F-term constraints and D-term constraints into account. And here, I've already taken the F-term constraint into account because I have modeled out the path algebra by the F-term relations. And then I have to consider D-term constraints. And of course, one of the ways is to just write down the F-term constraints and D-term constraints and divide by the gauge group. But there exists another way to do that, namely to just solve the F-term constraints and then divide by the complexified gauge group. That's one of the ways to compute the moduli space. And there exists a certain condition that the orbit of the complexified gauge group should contain the solution to the D-term equations. And that condition amounts to the so-called stability condition. And there exists a certain parameter theta here. And the physical meaning of this parameter theta is that it's related to the Fi parameter of the case. So recall that in order to write down F-term constraints, I have to introduce Fi parameters in general. So I have to introduce certain parameters. And depending on the value of the parameter, the moduli space changes in general. And this parameter theta introduced in some mathematics literature basically corresponds to the Fi parameter in the case. So I have taken care of F-term and D-term constraints. And thus, we can study the moduli space. But then the moduli space is finite dimensional. So, but then we have the localization theorem. So recall that I'm considering toric geometry, which we have a action of the torus on the geometry. And correspondingly, we have an action of torus on the moduli space. And then we can use the localization theorem, which says that in order to compute the Euler character of the moduli space, all we have to do is to to consider all the possible fixed points of the moduli space fixed by this torus action, and then sum up everything, sum up the contribution coming from each fixed point. So this is a kind of localization theorem. And by using this localization theorem, the counting problem of BPS space is equivalent to the counting problem of theta stable A modules fixed by two-dimensional torus. Well, so this might still look like a terrible mathematics notation, but it's actually, so what I should talk about is that the relation between this mathematics problem and the configuration of Morton crystal.
So probably I should try to, well, I have used. So, oh dear, I can use another plot fault here. So the original problem I was talking about is fronting of BPS states. And this is equivalent to counting of modules. But there exists a certain condition like a stability that, but I'm not going to write it here. And then this is equivalent to configuration of motoring crystal. So I think I have tried to explain what this equality. So I should explain this equality. So the problem is to construct a module starting from a configuration of motoring crystal. So let me try to do that. Well, I should use here, but anyway. So let me try to go back to the example of the previous slide. So let me see. So for example, there is an example here, but this looks very complicated. So let me try to do in a slightly smaller example. For example, this example, I think. Let me see. For example, in this example. So we have white atoms here. There is a blue vertex here, and there is this blue black atoms here, and also gray atom here, and so on. So this is a particular configuration of molten crystal, and I'd like to define a certain module of the fast algebra. And I'm going to do this in a simple rule. So for each atom, the first of the rule is that for each atom, I'm going to put a one-dimensional vector space. So, and let me denote its basis as EI. So in this case, for example, since I'm reviewing five different atoms, I'm going to consider five-dimensional representation. So recall that module is basically like a representation. And I'm going to consider finite dimensional representation. And in this case, I'm going to consider five-dimensional representation. And then there are a set of atoms, a set of arrows going in these directions. So in order to make a representation of the fast algebra, I have to assign a linear transformation. So suppose that there exists an arrow like here, x, y, z, I should write larger so that people can see, z, w, u, for example. And then the action of x is defined by sending e1 to e2, and all others 0. This is chosen because the arrow x just starts from x e1 and e2. But all the others are not included in this configuration. And for example, y is defined by just sending e1 to e4, and all the others 0, and so on. And you can define, for example, z is when sending e2 to e3, and so on. And then each of these bifundamental fields can be written as a linear transformation on this vector space. So I'm considering the vector space, and each of the arrow corresponds to a linear transformation. So they can be written as a matrix. And by using this method, I can construct the representation of the fast algebra. And of course, the most difficult part is that this, to show that all possible modules can be constructed using this crystal mating configuration. And that is what mathematicians prove. Well, so anyway, I wanted to try to explain why this counting problem can be reformulated as configuration molding crystal. And if you look at our paper, there exists another way to explain that. So if you're interested, you might prefer that explanation as well. So that's a basic idea of what we came to the proof, how we came to the proof. Sorry?
So you are going to explain the connection between three objects.
I see. Actually, that's what I'm going to explain right now. So I just explained the counting relation. So far, I just explained the relation between counting problem and the crystal. And I'm not saying anything about topological strings here. So I should explain that. So that's what I'm going to do from right now, actually. And the connection is kind of subtle, as I'm going to see. So what Kuhlmann corroborated this originally is that topological string theory is related to so-called commutative Thompson topology, which I have here. And then what I was talking here today is the counting problem of crystal. And this is in one-to-one correspondence with the configuration counting problem. But I have put the prime here.
in this formula. Well, the reason is that this is counting from the commutative Johnson Thomas theory, whereas this is a counting from the non-commutative Johnson Thomas theory. And the difference is between these is that the left-hand side is evaluated at a different point at the Kira module of infinity. So recall that I'm considering a counting problem of the various DPS states. But actually, that depends on the value of Kira module at infinity. And if you, in generic situation, if we change the value of Kira module, infinitesimally, the BPS state does not change at all. But there are certain four-dimensional one walls in the Kira module space, which is often called walls of marginal stability. And if you cross the walls of marginal stability, the BPS state actually changes. So for a partition function like a Z graph hole, there actually exists a dependence on the value of Kira module at infinity. So these are, in general, different quantities. And in order to relate this to this, I have to cross many, many infinite number of walls. So I have to take the wall crossing number into account. And there exists a beautiful formula due to convergence solvement, which says that how the BPS state jumps along whenever I cross the walls of marginal stability. So the correct statement between topological string theory and crystal mating is that crystal mating is equivalent to topological string theory module wall crossing. This is, I think, a kind of new feature of our crystal mating. Because that in the case of, in the case of C3, actually, there is no wall crossing phenomenon. So there is nothing wrong about what Murran, Lesitikin, and Okunkov did. And in that case, we have a equality. Crystal mating is itself equivalent to the topological string theory. But in general, since this is a counter problem in different jump of the moduli space, there exists a certain factor coming here. So these are not equivalent, but equivalent only if we take the wall crossing phenomenon into account. Does that answer your question? Or?
So in the case of non-commutative field theory, there is a parameter, non-commutativity parameter.
I see. So your question is how the non-commutative parameter appears in this construction. And actually, I think that's an
interesting. Is there a continuous parameter?
Actually, there is no continuous parameter in this construction. There exists a certain stability parameter, but that depends on non-commutativity parameter, because as I said, that just corresponds to FI parameters. And so I think that's an interesting question. And one of the ways to explain that is that in this situation, if I believe in what Greg and Frederick Denick and so on other people are saying, we are considering a situation with infinite field. So the original story about non-commutative field theory and so on in the Cyber-Witten paper is that if you include a B field, you have a non-commutative theory. And well, naively speaking, it seems that B field seems to be rather large in this setting. So probably that might explain the meaning of that.
So the usual commutative Donaldson theory corresponds to B field equals to zero.
Actually, the story is not that simple, I guess. Some people say that, Johnson Thomas theory corresponds to the D field in infinity, actually. So that's a kind of complicated situation. Frankly speaking, I don't know the answer. So at least there is a statement in the Jeffery Murat paper, for example, which says that non-commutativity, non-commutative Johnson Thomas theory should be related to inclusion of B field. But that's just a proposal, proposal. So I'm not sure, whether there is actually a relation between this non-commutativity and the inclusion of B field. And I think that's an interesting problem. But one possible explanation I can think of, that B field is infinitely large, so there is no commutativity parameter. So. But I don't know, that explanation might be wrong, or maybe correct. So. And mathematically speaking, the minimal non-commutative is just to consider non-commutative algebra. So I'm going to consider algebra which is a non-commutative algebra. That's the meaning of non-commutative. And in that construction, there is no deformation parameter. So I was explaining this. So let me try to give you an example of each of these cases. So in the case of conical, the Donaldson Thomas theory, which corresponds to the topological string partition function, is written in this form. We have the so-called Maclaurin function, and we have another function here. And the non-commutative Donaldson Thomas theory looks almost similar, but it's coming with a different factor, shown here. And there exists this is basically corresponds to, I should say that this corresponds to the parameter space on the parameter theta, which I introduced previously. So I was talking about the counting problem of the state of stable modules. And in this case, there are two positions, theta 1 and theta 2. So we have theta 1 going in this direction, theta 2 in another axis. And then we have a set of walls, walls of marginal stability. And then the Thomson Thomas theory corresponds to this very, very accurate, very small region here. And the non-commutative Thomson Thomas theory corresponds to the counting problem in this value of the variable, or more precisely speaking, the value of the stability parameter. And if you want to go from here, Thomson Thomas, commutative Thomson Thomas theory, the non-commutative Thomson Thomas theory, you have to actually cross infinite number of walls. And that gives you this infinite product. So each time, so this k lasts from 1 to infinity. So it's an infinite product. And each time if you cross this wall, you get an extra factor like 1 minus q inverse q to the power k times k. So you get one of these each factors if you, each time you cross this wall. And since you're crossing infinite number of walls, you have this infinite product. This is the difference between commutative Thomson Thomas theory and non-commutative Thomson Thomas theory. And there exists a formula which says that if you know the partition function in this in a particular region, say here, and then you can compute the partition function in another region, at least in principle, and that's the so-called wall crossing formula. And there is a certain discussion about this recently. So I think it's almost time. So let me try to I was considering the new crystal melting model, which captures the bound state of D0 and D2 and a single D6 frames with various starting various formative cycles of the Caribbean molecule, I should say, toric Caribbean 3-4. And then the important point is that our crystal model applies to the case of arbitrary toric Caribbean molecule. And what we found is that each BPS bound state is in one-to-one correspondence with the computational molten crystal. And this crystal melting model has some new features, like, for example, well, I'm not sure how essential this is, but we have used the past algebra, which is certainly non-commutative, so we have some non-commutativity emerging. And also, for example, atoms have different colors, which is a kind of new feature, because in the case of C3, we have only a single type of atom. Whereas in this case, we have different types of atoms making up the chemical bonds and connections and making crystals and so on. And I think that this is a kind of new feature. And one of the things I was explaining here is that in order to properly understand the relation between this crystal making feature, at least other crystal making model, and the topological string theory, we have to think carefully about the wall crossing phenomenon. And that's also another a new feature of our model. And there are various things I think which should be done. And one of the things I'm currently doing, which might appear quite soon, is the thermodynamic limit of this statistical mechanical model. So in a sense, we are doing a kind of statistical mechanics. I'm going to consider the ground state, and I'm going to consider excited state, each excited state, and so on. And then the natural question is what happens if I take the thermodynamic limit. And in this case, the thermodynamic limit corresponds to removing infinitely many atoms from the crystal. And what I was explaining previously, that in the case of, for example, in this example, as I was explaining, if you take the thermodynamic limit, we should have a figure like this. And this kind of figure, in this case, this figure, this line corresponds to these lines. And these lines are called, sometimes called limit shapes in the context of Diamond models and crystal metal picture. And so the interesting thing is that this shape of the crystal exactly coincides with a certain Lagrangian in the Miller-B model. So the important thing is that if you take the thermodynamic limit, the classical geometry naturally emerges. So this coincides with geometry of the Miller-B model. So I'm considering type 2 spring theory on a Faraday manifold, and then the geometry shown here corresponds to the Miller-Faraday manifold. And so, in that sense, the classical geometry is kind of reproduced from the crystal. And since the Diamond model, as I was explaining, the crystal melting model is equivalent to the Diamond model. And the Diamond model is actually almost exactly solvable. So one of the ways the Diamond model was studied in the 1960s is that it was used to solve the Eisenmodel, for example. And it's, in a sense, it's like a sort of model, so we can compute correlation function and so on. And so probably we might be able to think about the meaning of fluctuation and so on, and that might have interesting implications for black hole physics, for example. And well, there are other various things I can think of. Well, for example, I was originally talking about, so I began to talk with that by saying that there are two different connections between this founding problem of logical string theory. One is the Boyce conjecture, one is the crystal-based picture. And well, of course, as I pointed out, these two relations, one the OSD and the crystal medians, are in general called in different regions of validity, but in some cases, these two relations might hold. And by combining these relations, like naively speaking, we have a relation like Z-topological and Z-topological sphere. So of course, you might think that is nonsense, but of course, the argument inside the Z-topological is different. And of course, as I was telling you, this dead black hole and this black hole here on the left hand side and on the right hand side are evaluated at different points of the theorem ordinances. So if you want to go from here to there, you have to cross the infinite number of walls probably.
And also, you have to make sure that the deep brain charges are chosen so that we have a large black hole and a supergravity black hole formation about it, and we can use the OSP conjecture and so on. So there are various things I should consider, but I think it is possible that we have a relation like Z topological and Z topological sphere. And I guess that something like, if this kind of relation holds, I guess that something like S duality might be involved here. Because, for example, the chemical potential appears in this OSP conjecture as a kind of inverse, as an argument, but in this case, we have the chemical potential itself appears here. So something like S duality might be involved. And, well, if I have a relation like this, this might determine the topological string partition function completely. We're just solving this equation. So I think that might be an interesting story. And another story is to consider, so I was originally talking about non-commutative Johnson Thomas theory, but for the arbitrary toroidal manifold. But in the usual commutative Johnson Thomas theory, there exists a topological vertex formalism, which makes possible to compute a topological string partition function for an arbitrary toroidal manifold. And these are related by wall crossings. So by going through wall crossings, we should be able to find something that kind of counterpart our topological vertex for non-commutative Johnson Thomas theory as well. And I think this is an interesting possible direction. And well, another possible direction is to include these default brain charges. And so originally I was talking about D0, D2, and D6 brains, but from the viewpoint of non-commutative Johnson Thomas theory, there exists no obstacle, completely no obstacle to including D4 brains. And that, but the important point is that there exists no counterpart in the commutative Johnson Thomas theory for some reason. But there exists a sort of counterpart, but that's not widely discussed. And also the structure of the walls. So I was explaining the choice of conifold. There exists an infinite number of walls between commutative and non-commutative Johnson Thomas theory. And that kind of structure is completely unexplored when we include the four brain charges. So that might be a kind of interesting way to generalize the Donaldson Thomas theory. So these are the possible directions I can think of. And let me try to finish by talking something about a bit more philosophical. So one of the things we found is that BPS states can be constructed out of atoms. And the age of the atoms are, in a sense, like atoms of space-time, or like in a sense, like quarks. And as I was telling you, if you take the sum dynamic limit, I'm going to reproduce the classical geometry of the Cartesian manifold. This is when we are going to send the string coupling constant to zero. But if you keep the string coupling constant to finite, in a sense, the geometry of the Cartesian manifold is discretized. And the quanta of the spacetime looks like this atom shown here. So I think this might give a kind of possible clue to how we perceive spacetime in quantum gravity. So thank you very much for your attention. And this is the end of my talk.
One question. This melting crystal originally came in order just to count BPS state.
Right.
A nice way of organizing it. But in the end, when you talked about the thermodynamic limit, as far as I understood, there is a sense in which the effective dynamics of fluctuation is local on the crystal.
Effective dynamics is what, sorry?
That we have some effective local dynamic on the crystal that mimic the geometry.
Local dynamics, sorry, I still don't get it.
Local dynamics.
Local dynamics is encoded by crystal or?
Only crystal.
Local dynamics only crystal. So if I want to take the sum dynamics itself, I mean the local fluctuation I mean, that depends on the meaning of the local approximation, but.
But you said that it's the same as the geometry.
I mean, if I take some of the serious, I mean, well, let me see. The meaning, the fundamental by saying that the geometry appears by taking the sum of the dynamic limit is that limit shape, which appears after taking the sum of the dynamic limit, coincides with the geometry of the
right.
That's what I mean. But of course, even if you take the sum of the dynamic limit, there exists a kind of some dynamic model, and then there exists a non trivial correlation function and so on, for example. So I'm not sure what the meaning of that in the context of, for example, quantum GPS state, but that might have some interesting implications. That's what I'm trying to say. Sorry, does that answer the question, or?
I haven't asked the question yet. There is, for the geometry, there is a limit in which the effective dynamic is local on the geometry.
Effective dynamics is local on the geometry.
In a certain limit, in a classical limit.
He hasn't. Ask the question yet.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
This geometry seems to arise on this crystal. I'm trying to understand from the crystal point of view why an effective local dynamics on the crystal comes about. Because originally it just came about as a way of organizing space if you want to count.
I see. So probably, let me see if I understand your question. So your question is, so I was originally considering quantum problem of Calabria manifold and so on. Yeah. So it's a kind of, in a sense, it's a kind of global problem because I'm not paying attention to any particular region of the module, like Calabria geometry, for example. I'm just considering, like, say, D-brains in certain regions, and I'm not focusing on a particular region of the Calabria module space. But
that at a little temperature when there is some fluctuation.
Right. So how should I answer?
So there is a proposal of effective field theory that describes the melting of the crystal. It's called Kerr-Grant.
Right.
So there is a proposal of effective low energy field theory that describes the
and it's local on the crystal, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Why? What is the principle?
What is the principle?
Why is it local in this specific representation of the counting of BPS? What is the meaning of two BPS states that are close to each other?
Maybe, for example, if there exists a certain combination, and if I remove the atoms, and you have a single atom, for example, and then you have a combination, and they look similar. So, are you asking for a relation between these two BPS states, for example, or?
I'm just trying to understand how locality comes about in this specific parameterization of the BPS.
I see. So. I see. So your question is, I mean, the geometry itself is of course spontaneous, but somehow I was claiming that is discretized when I agree that, I mean, keep the string coupling constant finite. So the question is how the continuity is broken in that picture. I don't know how to answer. Yeah, of course, if you're asking me about some deep questions about quantum gravity, but I have no idea, but. One of the answers I can think of is that one of the relations is that kind of localization theorem, which I was originally counting the moduli space of BPS supersymmetric quantum mechanics, and that itself has dimensions, of course, so it's a continuous moduli space. But then I'm using the localization theorem to compute, to reduce the bounding volume of modular space to a point. Or another answer might be as I was saying that is from the viewpoint of Kerr gravity. And so I was talking about including various D0 and D2 brains. And in the interpretation of Iqbal, Iqbal, that corresponds to growing up the geometry. and so changing the geometry. And so there exists a kind of proposal for the Hill of gravity. And I think that the hope is that the capture is something called the quantum forms in quantum gravity. So we have the classical, we have the single very smooth geometry. So the basic picture is, so I have, lost the box. Where are the
chunks? There's a box. There are both in front of the screen.
In front of the screen. Oh, I see. So well, I cannot see. So probably. So probably, the quantum form picture as proposed by Fowler and other people is that if the sum dynamic limit, for example, in the case of CC looks like this. So it's like a very, classical, very smooth geometry. And then, so this is the case of string coupling constant almost zero. It's a sum dynamic limit. And what I was talking about is that this corresponds to removing, for example, atoms, for example, a certain number of atoms, for example. This is the kind of theory here. But anyway, so I'm going to remove a various number of atoms from this metric column of the crystal. So it's a kind of discrete situation. And you go to the extreme situation where the string coupling goes to infinity, that corresponds to the situation where, well, there is almost no notion like a geometry. So we have various possible forms of the quantas. And so I have no idea what this is supposed to represent, but that corresponds to the situation where the geometry continues kind of almost always fluctuates, and there is no control about what's happening here. And that, I think the proposal in that case is that each of the so-called space-time form, quantum form, corresponds to this kind of atoms.
I understand that, but suppose I'm taking this thermodynamic limit, or even not, but large, any local fluctuation there, like in map to 2 BPS state.
So you're talking about this situation. Not about this situation.
Somewhere in between.
So probably we can continue the discussion afterwards.
Any more questions?
Sorry, I have a basic misunderstanding. So you're talking about Calabi-Yau's, but in some sense you keep talking back about C3. So
So this is just an example of C3.
Right. So is C3 is?
Yeah, C3.
So you are trying to ask the question, how would that quantum C3 look like?
That's a very special case of our general proposal. So our proposal applies to all sort of Calabi-Yau manifolds, but C3 is just a single, very special example. And I was explaining this in the case of C3.
But only your Calabi-Yau's are non-compact, right?
Right, non-compact.
And so this type of quantization of Calabi-Yau's, is that in the context of what string theory, topological string theory?
Well, the Hausdorff problem, physical type 2A string theory on Calabi-Yau manifold.
Type 2A.
Yeah, type 2A string theory on Calabi-Yau manifold is various DP brands up in P cycles.
So you're saying that there is an understanding how to quantize any toric Calabi-Yau. What is kind of the crystal melting picture for any toric Calabi-Yau?
Right.
Any
non-compact toric Calabi-Yau.
Okay.
Yeah. So probably the natural derivation is to go beyond the toric condition. But if I don't have a torus action, there is the practical. Of course, I can think about such objects as a modular space or supersymmetric quantum mechanics. But there exists no quantization, for example. So the practical computation is difficult. And of course, another question is to consider the case of compact Calabi-Yau. But that again, of course, the gravity does not decouple. And of course, there is a certain discussion about, say, wall crossing phenomena in the case of compact Calabi-Yau manifolds. That's again another story.
But for example, if we look at type two strings here, right, the Calabi-Yau conditions are being modified. If we go beyond the say supergravity approximation.
I see.
So which sense that does it? So in some sense, I kind of. I want to know, so are you talking about alpha prime?
I see. So probably you're worrying about, whether the alpha prime collections might change themselves, for example. The point is that I'm considering DPS states, or in other words, beta index of supersymmetric feedback quantum mechanics. So that is protected by various quantum corrections.
So you are exacting G string, is that the idea? But
Since
more than alpha prime.
Even if we include alpha prime, I don't think the result changes.
Not in the case of BPS Well, I mean, this is not quite clear to me. I mean, if we quant, so are you saying that you're doing a quantization of Calabi Yaos mm-hmm. in which you you restrict yourself only to BPS? I thought your message is that the BPS states quantize a Calabi Yao, but
right. That's
probably not full story, right?
Because you are talking about non BPS vectors, or
we know that Calabi Yao manifolds, the condition of Ricci flatness is modified by alpha prime corrections in supersymmetric background. And so I'm asking you what are you quantizing in, say, real type two string? If I take real type two strings here, in what regime you are? So you're telling me that everything is protected, but I'm saying that the Calabi Yao condition is modified. So I'm asking you what kind of Calabi Yaos are you describing by melting crystals? Exactly in which regime?
You mean alpha prime or GS?
I'm asking you, I don't know.
Oh, okay, so. So if you're talking about GS, for example, and then basically I'm talking about a region where GS is folder boundaries. So if you're taking a region where GS goes to zero, you are taking some dynamic. That's also like I was discussing, that basically the folder where GS is zero, folder one. And if I consider the region GS goes to infinity, that's why it's going to quantum form and so on, which I don't understand. That's the answer for GS. And for about alpha prime corrections, since one of the possible caveats is that I'm considering sympathetic game theory, for example. That's just a low energy description. So the question is whether the alpha prime correction might change the results, for example. But about that point, I'm computing the index thing, which is protected. So. So in a sense, we are doing this kind of semi-classical quantum.
So I guess maybe you set an aspect of Calabi Yao geometry up to that, but someone's aspect like metric.
Yeah, metric should also be. For example, metric should also completely be different. In this case, for example, if I believe in what Kuhlmann says, for example, we are considering the blow up of the geometry, for example, and of course the metric changes if I blow up the geometry. And so, I don't think the metric is preserved, for example. But mm-hmm. Okay. So we are basically starting from, we are doing the kind of semi-classic, taking the semi-classic.
More questions? Okay. Let's ask Masahito again.